2 years ago, the University of Maryland Board of Regents voted to leave the Atlantic Coast Conference and send its athletic teams after the big money and prestige of the Big Ten. There was a lot of negative reaction to the move. Maryland had been a founding member of the ACC in 1953, and it hadn't exactly outgrown the regional competition. But with the 2014 football season approaching, a lot of the negativity has been replaced with excitement, as well as lingering concern about what the transition will mean for athletics at College Park. Sports at Large commentator Milton Kent joins us to talk about the move to the Big Ten after the news from NPR. That's the University of Maryland fight song. Welcome to Midday, everyone, our second hour. As we head into the fall football season, University of Maryland Athletics is undergoing a big change. 2 years ago, the University of Maryland Board of Regents officially announced that the school would be moving from the Atlantic Coast Conference, the ACC. Maryland was a founding member of the ACC back in 1953. Leaving the ACC, moving into the Midwest-based Big Ten Conference. The move was effective July 1st. During this hour of today's show, continuing our conversation about college sports, we'll be looking at this story from the beginning, including why the University of Maryland decided to make this move and at what the reactions have been to it so far and what the future could look like for Terrapins athletics. Joining me in the studio is Sports at Large commentator here from WYPR, Milton Kent. Milton has been writing about sports locally and nationally since a long time ago, for a long time now, since the 1980s. And he's a journalism professor at Morgan State University and a graduate of
the University of Maryland.
Nice to see you, Milton.
Nice to see you, Dan.
Thanks for joining us. In a little while, Aaron Kasenitz, the sports editor of the Diamondback, where he used to work at the University of Maryland,
sure,
will be joining us about to give his perspective as well. But let's start at the beginning here, because I must admit, it's been a couple of years since the announcement was made. I think we made brief mention of it on Midday back in 2012 during one of our Week in Review wraps, but never really talked about it very much on the air. Why it's happening, why this decision was made, what does Maryland get out of it? So what brought it all about? Let's start with you.
Well, I'm sitting at home on a Saturday afternoon in November of 2012. And I'm looking on the screen. It's probably a college football game or something on. And across the screen, there's a scroll that says University of Maryland considering moving to the Big Ten. And I thought, you know, in this day and age, that's you know, internet garbage.
Uh-huh.
But a friend of mine who now works at Wake Forest called me later that evening, and he said, "There's something to this."
Wow. It was a wow, wasn't it?
Yeah, there are a few things, there are a few things in sports today, or just in the broader context, that really really catch you off guard. This is one of them. The context for this is that University of Maryland, the athletic department, was running deficits. Has been running deficits basically since about the time late in the tenure of former athletic director Debbie Yao. As you talked about in the first hour, you get, particularly the big programs, get into a point where you do have an arms race, where, you know, our facilities have to be better. Anybody who's been on the College Park campus in the last, I'd say, 5 or so years, you start with the Comcast Center, which replaced Coalfield House, but you drive around from there and you see a brand new softball field and you see a brand new field hockey and lacrosse field. Those things cost money. And Maryland got to a point where, in their minds, they couldn't afford to continue doing what they were doing. And as you mentioned in the last hour, they announced that some sports would have to be cut. So they entered into discussions with the Big Ten Conference, Jim Delaney, the commissioner, private conversations, and we can discuss that throughout the hour if you'd like. But they entered into private conversations. The current president of the school, Wallace Lowe, was formerly provost at Iowa, and I'm sure had a relationship with Mr. Delaney.
A Big Ten school.
A Big Ten school. And discussions were held. And before you know it, here's the announcement. And 60-some years of tradition go, you know, are ended.
Yeah. It takes a minute for this to sink in,
sure.
Right? Especially an alumnus
yeah.
such as yourself. University of Maryland, along with all those other Southern Atlantic Coast teams, were in the ACC from the beginning, from 1953, North Carolina, Duke, Wake Forest, Clemson, all those schools. So, and it kind of makes sense geographically geographically speaking.
Yeah.
And then the Big Ten, you know, I associate with Bubba Smith. I mean, really, in my
yeah,
mind, it's Michigan
right.
State, it's Michigan, right? Isn't that Big Ten?
Yeah, Michigan State, Ohio State,
yeah.
Minnesota, all, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I go back a long way. I just mentioned
sure.
Bubba Smith.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah. Also, it took me a moment. It was like,
well,
yeah, okay, yeah, he did
what
go
I
to
think
Michigan.
Of, you know, I think that's where, that's out there in the Midwest someplace, right?
Right? Yeah.
And the Big Ten is actually bigger than 10 schools.
It has been for a while. And sort of a broader context for this is that what the Big Ten has done with Maryland and also Rutgers, which also has come in, is a part of a trend that really goes back to the early 90s. And the Big Ten sort of started it. There were 10 schools originally, and then the Big Ten welcomed in Penn State, which had been independent for years. They were sort of the outlier. Everybody, you know, for years, you know, you had your schools that were in conferences, and then you had schools like Penn State, Notre Dame, Army, Navy that were independents, that made up their own schedules, made their own arrangements. But as television, again, we have to go back a little bit further. The thing that's really kicked all of this off, that's really made this go, is a Supreme Court decision in 1984. The NCAA, you had a bunch of schools in the SEC, the Southeastern Conference. The NCAA used to have control over television revenue on all levels of the sport, including football. And they had a rule that basically said when they negotiated TV contracts with the networks, a school could only appear twice in the course of a year. So a group of schools, Georgia, Oklahoma, sued the NCAA. And the Supreme Court ruled in their favor and said that the NCAA did not have control over those schools in terms of football television revenue.
They could not limit the number of times they appeared in a national telecast.
Exactly. So from that point forward, it became a race to see who could align each other with each other for to get together into conferences or make alignments based on money. And that's
right.
what it's all about.
Who could get the biggest piece of the
right.
pot? From television, and television revenue runs into the billions of dollars.
So here's what has happened over the course of those 30 or so years. Once upon a time, you had a conference called the Southwest Conference that had Texas, Texas A&M, all the Texas schools in Arkansas. That school, that conference dissipated. Many of those schools went to the Big Eight, what was then called the Big Eight. Some other schools went in other directions. Then you had Penn State, sort of the big school in the Northeast. And there were rumors for years that the ACC wanted them, the Big East wanted them, but the Big Ten went and got them. That really is where everything sort of jumped off from there. It became the Big Ten plus one.
So Maryland does this
yes.
because it sees TV revenue being greater when it competes against a Big Ten school.
Well, here's what...
Is that basically it?
What the Big Ten has basically sold Maryland on is this. If Maryland stays in the ACC, the television revenue that the ACC has negotiated with their partner, television partners, ESPN, CBS, so forth and so on, roughly comes to about $15 million a year, which is a pretty good chunk of change for anybody. What the Big Ten did was, not only did they establish contracts with, again, ABC, ESPN, and so forth, they also created their own television network. So they took... What they've done with that is they've taken a group of games that aren't on network television. They've taken that. So let's say Ohio State is playing Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
It's a non-conference game. But they know that there's a lot of interest for Ohio State people who don't live in the area. They establish a network amongst their schools. And they say, they go to their folks and they say, we can give you $25 million a year Now, there's another round of negotiations.
Because
that are
they've
going
developed
on.
Another source of revenue. Is
yeah,
that it?
Basically, they go to like DirecTV. I have DirecTV.
Mm-hmm.
They go to DirecTV. They sell that network to DirecTV. DirecTV pays subscriber fees, just and all the cable companies do too, that money, instead of going to a network, goes directly to the conference, wow, which sends it out to the schools.
So there's a double cash cow there.
So if you're if
in
you're,
terms of TV,
yeah. So if you're Maryland and you're sitting and you're looking at a deficit, you're looking at eliminating sports, and you're looking at a deficit, you say, I can get $25 million now, with the possibility there are, you know, there are projections that in the next round of deals, which are coming up in the next couple 3 years, that that figure may go up to $44 million a year, and that's, you know, that's found money.
Mm-hmm.
That's money in the sofa.
Now, this move from the ACC into the Big Ten is costing Maryland some money at first, right?
At first, yes, because, and, you know, the ACC became, you know, let's not paint them out to be sort of the victim in all of this, because what the ACC did was, again, to improve their football standing. That's, this is what this is all about. All of the moves that have been made in college sports over the last 30 years are to improve a conference or a school's football standing, okay? So what the ACC did was basically, once some moves started happening, they went and raided the Big East. So they went to schools like Miami and Virginia Tech.
Boston College.
Boston College in the first round. They grabbed them out of the Big East. And what they and what you do in the process, you not only, now Virginia Tech maybe not so much, but you go and take television markets. So they took the Boston TV market, the Miami TV market, and Virginia Tech is actually very big in D.C. So you further establish yourself in those markets. They took those schools.
Thank you for that bit of history, because you sometimes forget, you look at this as the ACC being victimized, oh, being abandoned by Maryland, but actually they've been positioning themselves to be a stronger football conference.
Right.
Yeah.
So in the process of doing all of that, you know, you make up, you know, you say, okay, here are our termination, here's the clauses by which you may leave the school, you can leave the conference. And they ratcheted up those, you know, those fees, you know, for obvious reasons. You know, you go raid somebody else, but you don't want your folks leaving.
Right.
So Maryland left after they came up with a rule, or the ACC came up with a rule that said, if you leave the conference, you have to give us a certain amount of notice, and you have to pay us $52 million. It's very similar, and I think folks here in Baltimore will kind of understand, hopefully understand the reference. The Colts didn't leave Baltimore until the legislature, the Maryland legislature, enacted eminent domain. Bob Irsay took his team out of town because he was afraid that the state was going to seize his property
right. Mm-hmm.
without giving him what
right.
he thought was.
I remember.
Well,
it's 30 years ago.
Exactly. Well, yeah. That's where this, and this is sort of the college version of eminent domain.
Right. Now, there's been a settlement in that case, right?
Yes. What the ACC and what the ACC and Maryland sort of came to an agreement was, okay, look, you're taking $31 million. You've already got $31 million of our money. Why don't you keep that? In exchange, we end the hostilities, because there are fears that if this had gone to trial, the discovery in that trial would have opened up some serious can of worms. Like, we might have found out, the Big Ten has, for instance, claimed that the ACC tried to poach two schools from the Big Ten before, you know, I guess once they heard rumors that Maryland might be going, they tried to grab two schools from the ACC. So
to settle all this, Maryland agreed to pay $31.3 million.
Well, they didn't exactly pay it. The ACC was
holding
the money anyway.
They just won't get it. That's right.
They just won't get it.
Okay. Milton Kent is our guest in this hour of the show, leading our discussion about the University of Maryland's transition from the ACC to the Big Ten starting now. How do you feel about this? Are you a University of Maryland alumnus? How did you feel about this switch? Do you think this is a good idea? 410-662-8780 is the number for Midday. We invite you to join our conversation during this hour, or send me an email. I'll read it on the air, midday@wypr.org. Before we go to our break here, I want to introduce Aaron Kazinets, who's the sports editor for the University of Maryland student paper there, the Diamondbacks. Aaron, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Yeah. I don't know where to begin with you. I just wonder, it's a little early yet, but you're getting ready to go back to school, I assume. How is this playing out at College Park? Let me start with that. The student reaction over the last year, and what do you anticipate now and going into the fall?
It's been an interesting two years or so. When the news first broke, obviously it was a big deal. But people are kind of numb to it, I think, at this point. I think it's been, in a way, kind of like a long engagement. We know what's happening. We know what's coming. July 1st was the date that the official move happened, and there's a bunch of events on campus. And it was certainly a cool time, but it feels like it's been such a long time coming that the emotions have kind of worn off.
In terms of what we were just discussing, Milton and I, the amount of money that Maryland is basically foregoing, millions of dollars in leaving the ACC, and the debts that it had incurred already in the athletics department, what kind of position is Maryland in going into the Big Ten? Wasn't exactly dominating the ACC in terms of athletic competition. You do have to wonder how will the football team, the basketball team, fare going into this big conference?
Yeah, I think that's obviously an interesting point. Maryland, the ACC is comparable, obviously, to the Big Ten. They're both big schools or big conferences. I think Maryland's football team will surprise some people. They're not a team that's going to compete for a national championship or a Big Ten championship, but they're a veteran team, and the basketball team has always recruited, or at least since Mark Turgeon's been around these last 4 years, has recruited as well as anybody in the country. So the basketball team will have the talent, the football team will have the experience. I expect both teams to be around the middle of the pack. And you mentioned the financial situation. I think that's something that the university expects to get better over time with the Big Ten's revenue sharing and with the extra money that they have. So I think the future's pretty bright for Maryland athletics, but it's really interesting time because so much has happened recently. And Mark Turgeon and Randy Edsall, the two coaches here, they've had some success, enough success to keep their jobs, but not enough success to really prove that they're mainstays here. So it'll be interesting to see how the year unfolds.
I ask you both this question. Does moving into the Big Ten help Maryland in terms of recruiting talent for these teams? Just a little bit of sports talk here before we get back to the sports business. First, Aaron, let me hear from you on that.
Yeah, it's interesting. This past basketball recruiting year was Mark Turgeon's first year, full year recruiting guys, knowing that he'd be playing in the Big Ten. And he pulled in one of the best recruiting classes Maryland has ever had. And the interesting thing about that is he recruited local guys and a kid from Georgia who, unfortunately, got arrested and will not join the team, Trayvon Reed. But he recruited kids from the South and he recruited kids from the area and still sold them on going out to the Big Ten. So I think if that proves anything, it really won't. I don't know how much it'll help recruiting, but I don't think it'll hurt it at all. I think Maryland's, the basketball team is certainly a brand, and the football team is growing its brand, and I think that's more important than what conference you play in.
Let me hear from
it'll change things, but not drastically.
Let me hear from Milton on that question.
Yeah, I mean, there's a theory, actually, and it's, I think it's a very valid one, that if you're a football player, if you're a local football player, if you've got some skill from Baltimore or Prince George's County or the state of Maryland, now that the Big Ten is available to you, why would you want to go to a school in College Park that last year had a record of 7-6 and lost to Marshall in the Military Bowl? Or would you accept if say the coach of Michigan, where there are 110,000 people every Saturday come to watch you play, or at Ohio State, where there's 100,000 people, now that door is open, why would you go to College Park where they've struggled to get 50,000 people?
What if you were, but I could turn that around and say, what if you're a marginal player and, maybe you're an ACC quality football player? I don't mean to diminish that at all, but yeah.
The defending national champion.
And you get a chance
champion,
to play against these schools.
Well,
right?
The defending national champion comes from the ACC. So, I mean, there's decent football in the ACC.
You got a point there, yeah.
There's decent football
say you're not recruited by the top five schools or something. Right,
okay.
And then Maryland's there, and you get a chance to play against Michigan, Ohio State. Maybe it's a bigger stage. No,
That's great, but what does that do for the school? So you're recruiting marginal. If you're Maryland, you're getting two and three star talent.
Yeah, you're back to business here.
Well, I'm
thinking about the player. No, okay.
No, I mean you're getting two and three star talent, while Michigan and Ohio State are getting four and five star talent.
Mm-hmm. But only for a few years. Maybe then it starts to improve?
I just think
Under Armour uniforms don't help. Huh?
I think this from a football standpoint is a dumb move, mostly because football in this area, why people in this area don't care about Maryland football in the way that they do in places like Penn State, Ohio State, mm-hmm. and Michigan. Mm-hmm. We are a Ravens and Washington NFL football team. Notice how I didn't use that name. So Maryland football in this area is at best third place. And going forward, I think Towson has the potential to become Baltimore's college football team.
Milton, this is interesting. We have to take a break here. And Aaron Kasnitz, can you stay with us on the phone a little while, Aaron?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Okay. I want to talk some more. Aaron, the sports editor of the Diamondback at College Park. Milton Kent, a graduate. He actually did graduate from the University of Maryland.
Yeah,
College Park.
Actually did.
Sports at Large commentator. We'll take a break here. We'd like to get some phone calls in. Please join our conversation. 410-662-8780. A short break. We'll be right back. I didn't know until today that the University of Maryland had a fight song. I mean, I assume every college does. You have two?
There's two.
Do you know the words of this one?
This one, no.
I love the tuba. Can we listen to a little bit of that? Then it goes to brass.
Yeah,
it's
see,
great.
I'm only used to hearing this when Maryland's behind. This is like the one they play when Maryland's behind. The other one is, Maryland, we're all behind you. Raise high the black and gold. For there is nothing half so glorious as to see our team victorious. You're going to make me see this whole thing, aren't you?
Well, it's good. Milton Kent, you did graduate from College Park.
Yes, I did.
Milton Kent, Sports at Large commentator. We're going to go to the phone lines, take a couple of calls here. Aaron Kasnitz also joining us. He's the sports editor at the Diamondback. Let's take a call here. And Aaron and Milton, feel free to respond to what our caller has to say. This is Dawn. Dawn, welcome to Midday.
Hi, Dan. I very much enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I just want to say I think it's ill-advised for Maryland to join the Big Ten because they're, in my opinion, they're entering an arms race that they can't win. And in interest of full disclosure, I'm a Michigan grad. And every year, the Michigan Athletic Department takes in more revenue than it expends on all sports, including women's sports, and returns a check for $10 million to the regents of the university. So, I mean, Maryland, they don't even fill their football stadium.
But can I ask you this question, and then I'll ask Aaron and Milton for your opinion. Does the quality of the competition help? If they don't fill their football stadium, say Purdue comes to town, or I don't know, Michigan or Michigan State, does that help at the stadium in College Park?
Oh, it's certainly going to help, but here's what's going to happen. And I can see it happening as early as next year. Maryland goes to Michigan this year, which means Michigan will come here next year. More than likely, if I'm Kevin Anderson at the University of Maryland, what I do is I move that game, the Michigan game, not to Byrd Stadium where there's 50,000. I try to play up here at M&T Bank Stadium where there's 70,000, which is a great move. One problem, you're going to have half the stadium filled with Michigan alums. You're going to have 30 to 35,000 Michigan alums, people who live in the D.C. Baltimore area, coming into Baltimore, cheering down your school. I mean, they're going to pay you the money. You're going to get the money, but it's going to sound like a game at the Big House.
Don, do you agree with that? Don?
I agree with that. You wait till Penn State comes to College Park or D.C. or wherever. You wait until Ohio State or Wisconsin. At Byrd Stadium, they might get, 50,000 people on a good day?
Mm-hmm.
But when Ohio State comes down, you're going to see nothing but scarlet and gray.
Okay, let's go to Aaron. What do you think of that, your opinion?
Yeah, I think I agree with Don there. It's very much the culture in College Park is very much not the same as Ohio State or Michigan. Going to football games here isn't really that big of a deal. Students aren't that excited about it. And, if they played in M&T Bank Stadium, there would be many Michigan fans. But the question I raise is would it be better in the ACC? In the ACC, you're playing half-empty stadiums and not making any money. I don't think Maryland can compete with Michigan in terms of their on-the-field performance or their fan support. But if they're spend more money in the Big Ten, you know, is that beneficial for the school? And it probably is.
Here's a tweet from Dan Lawrence says, I'm excited for Penn State to come to Maryland next year. If they play in Maryland, I'm going. Probably a PSU alum, I would think. Christopher has a different opinion about this. Christopher thinks this is a good idea, and thank you for calling Midday.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good
sure.
to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm a current Maryland student, and I think it's worth mentioning that there are a lot of reasons for moving to the Big Ten. Increased revenue is one of them, but when I came to university, the administration cut 7 sports teams, and I remember when they made the announcement, part of the goal of this increased revenue is to bring back some of those sports teams, like sometime in the future. So I think, you know, say we want about the Big Ten, but I think they're looking at the whole the university, the administration is looking at the whole the big picture here when joining.
All right, Christopher, thank you very much. Bob in Baltimore with an email, and your comment on this is a little speculative, but it's interesting. Doesn't Under Armour and Nike and sponsors such as that pay colleges for showing off their brands on uniforms? Isn't the University of Maryland's move to the Big Ten partly motivated by exposing the Under Armour brand to the Midwest and bigger national television audiences?
Well, I mean, I suppose you can make that argument, but it's not as if the ACC, I mean, geez, what school has bigger visibility over the last 5 to 10 years in sports than Duke?
Duke? You mean
basketball?
Basketball.
Yeah. I mean,
what about these football uniforms, though?
Again, all of this presupposes the idea that Maryland, and you know, we've talked sort of around the idea of the arms race. All this presupposes that Maryland is going to raise its football program to a level to compete with a Michigan and Ohio State. I just think I think that's specious.
I just want to understand something.
Yeah.
And Aaron, help me out here, and Milton, doesn't moving into the Big Ten, just in terms of football, we'll get to basketball in a minute, doesn't that just put Maryland on a bigger stage than it had with in terms of television than the ACC? Yes or no?
Oh, there's no question.
Okay.
There's no question.
Okay. So the writer, the listener's point here in email is that, you know, this gives Under Armour bigger exposure, theoretically, right?
Theoretically. But the other part, the other component of that is winning. I mean, it's one, you know, I'm sure, you know, I don't know who, well, maybe that's the point. I don't even know who Indiana's supplier is. But that's the point. Indiana's in the Big Ten. They play football. Do you know what, who outfits Indiana?
No, but if I... Aaron, help me out here, because I like the University of Maryland football uniforms. I think they're wild.
Right.
I think they're amazing to the eye. Maybe too confusing for some people, but I think that's a cool thing that Under Armour did. Kevin Plank, a big alumnus, of course, played football there. Aaron, let's hear from you on that idea.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Kevin Plank does have some influence, a big influence on what goes on with the school and the athletic department, but. Again, there'll be a few more eyeballs on Maryland jerseys in the Big Ten, but it's not like Maryland wasn't on national television before. It's not like their jerseys weren't seen by millions of people before. So I understand the email's point, but I don't think that was the motivating factor behind the Big Ten move at all.
All right, Aaron, thank you very much for being with us today, and good luck. Is this your senior year at Maryland?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be a senior this year.
Before you go, he's a sports editor. I remembered Milton wanted to ask you a question about this move to the Big Ten.
Yeah, Aaron, because I remember I was a sports director at WMUC, the radio station, and one of the concerns that we had years ago was being able to travel to games. Now,
right.
I know the Diamondback has had a tradition over the years where the paper has covered, correct me if I'm wrong, every football and every men's basketball game with a staff writer there for years, right?
Right.
Just about. Okay, so now what happens when you guys, instead of sending somebody in a car to Charlottesville, you have to put somebody on a plane to Minneapolis? What does that do for – how are your budgets?
Yeah, we've Mr. Michael Frybush is the head of MMI. We're owned by a parent company. For listeners who don't know, the Diamondback is completely independent of the school. There's a student newspaper, but we don't get any money from the school. We make money through ads just like a normal newspaper. And we have a budget just like a normal newspaper, and just like a normal newspaper, we've been struggling over the last several years. So we will eventually have to make amendments to our travel budget. That's something that's ongoing. We're going to try to get to as many football games and basketball games as we can, but yeah, you're absolutely right. We're going to have to fly a little bit more, and we might have to at some point start chopping off some games that we would like to cover in person, but might not be able to.
All right, Aaron. Thanks for being with us today. And again, good luck in your senior year at College Park.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Okay. Aaron Kasenitz, who is the sports editor of the Diamondback. Milton Kent, Sports at Large, commentators with us here. We welcome your phone calls if you'd like to add your opinion to Maryland's move to the Big Ten. If you're an alumnus, were you upset at the beginning of this when it was first announced? Have you settled in now and accepted it? Do you think it's a good idea? 410-662-8780 is the number. Frank in Hampstead says, I am a parent of a student at the University of Maryland, and the university is spending an enormous amount of money on the athletic department instead of updating dorms that were built in the 1920s. Further, many student-athletes appear to be going to school on a scholarship with no intention of getting a degree. They appear to be going to school only to be spotted by talent scouts, and they leave for the pros as soon as they are eligible. This is has been true for basketball. He says, this is a waste. Scholarships, if given, schools should require a degree, that a degree be earned by the athlete. If they don't graduate, then they should pay the scholarship back. This is supposed to be a school, not a way station on the way to the pros.
Now, I mean, that sort of gets, I mean, it really sort of gets the sort of the theme of the first hour that you had. And, you know, what is the mission of a school? I mean, you could make the argument that the athletic department for schools can be something of a marketing, and if you want to look at it that way, sort of a marketing arm that opens, that sort of, you know, exposes the school's brand to a wider, you know, wider group of people. But I mean, I can't argue with that. I mean, I think all schools in the NCAA kind of struggle with that. I mean, how do you maintain a school's integrity if you have students who are there, who are there for the principal reason to play a sport. Now, it's interesting, just today, Maryland announced this thing called the Maryland Way Guarantee. You and I have even
heard this. The Maryland Way Guarantee?
Yeah. What they've pledged that for all of their sports, they will, for all sports, not just football and men's basketball, they will provide a multi-year scholarship guarantee. I mean, basically, and if your eligibility runs out, the school will still make sure that you get a degree for all student-athletes.
Being announced today, huh?
Yeah, just announced today.
We'll take a break here. Give me a chance to read this. Thank you for bringing it to our attention, Milton. We'll take a break here. We listen to that other Maryland fight song, the one that you don't know. You don't know the words of this one?
I know the words.
You know the words of the other one?
Yeah.
All right. If you know the words of this one, you can sing along here. We'll listen to it a little bit as we go into a break. We'll be right back. Following up on what Milton was just telling us about from the University of Maryland Athletics, the University of Maryland has announced it will be one of the first NCAA Division I institutions to offer a lifetime degree guarantee for student athletes in all sports. A lifetime degree guarantee in all sports. In addition, the university is incorporating the promise of exhausted eligibility aid into financial aid agreements. Should a student athlete exhaust his or her eligibility prior to graduating, Maryland will guarantee his or her aid will continue through graduation. If a student athlete is injured and unable to compete, Maryland will guarantee his or her aid will continue through graduation. Additionally, Maryland will provide tuition, books, and fees for any student athlete who leaves the institution in good academic standing and returns to complete their degree. And I wanted to see what the difference was here from past policy. It says previously, Maryland student athletes were offered a one-year financial agreement, which were subject to renewal every year. Mm-hmm. In accordance with NCAA rules, scholarships can be canceled or reduced for any reason at all after the one-year agreement expires. Yeah, I know a lot of athletes who discovered this. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it says, despite these regulations permitting one-year agreements, Maryland is showing a strong commitment to student-athlete success by promising not to cancel or reduce our student-athlete scholarships for on-field or on-court performance. And this applies to all sports, not just the big revenue sports of football and basketball.
Yeah, the big myth of college athletics is that people think you get a full four-year ride.
Yeah.
You don't. You only get a one-year scholarship. So what they're basically saying is, we're going to take care of you until you graduate.
That's pretty good. I mean, that Is that going to help with recruitment? That's pretty enticing.
Of course it does. And I would think this may be the, you know, I guess from my way of thinking, this may be the one positive of going to the Big Ten. I mean, they now, I guess, have the money where they can guarantee this.
Huh, yeah. Okay. That's very interesting.
That's the one, though.
Milton Kent is with us here for our Sports at Large commentator. We're talking about the University of Maryland's transition from the ACC into the Big Ten and why. Charles is giving us a ring. Charles, you're on Midday Next. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Go right ahead, Charles.
Well, I do think there's a bigger point with Maryland joining the Big Ten. Certainly when I went to the University of Maryland and possibly when Milton went to the University of Maryland, Maryland was a very average, mediocre state university. Now it's considered in the top 20 national public research universities. And what happened along the way is that the state of Maryland decided that the University of Maryland College Park should attempt to become the best national public research university that can for the state, to benefit the state. And I think that Maryland joining the Big Ten is a big part, is sort of the next step in that process. Certainly the ACC is a fine athletic conference, great schools, but it's a mix of schools. It's public, it's private, and many of the private schools, although they're fantastic, they're not in Maryland's peer group. So the key is to join that peer group and to benefit not only from being in the appropriate peer group, but also to benefit as a national research university from what collaboration with the University of Michigan, Illinois, Penn State, Wisconsin, what all those universities can offer. Maryland has this Maryland Square, M Square Research Park, and I think that this will be a big part of growing that park. And the CIC, which Milton can explain, should benefit Maryland as well as all the other benefits and that'll come from collaboration with large public research universities. That is not going to come from being in a conference with fine schools like Duke or Miami that are private. And I think that is the number one issue when looking at Maryland joining the Big Ten.
Charles, thank you very much for your comments. CIC, Milton?
Yeah, I'm aware of the – I know what he's talking about. I believe the one I'm familiar with is the American Association of Universities, that there's a a condition of Big Ten membership is you have to be a member of the American Association of Universities. And I know he's talking about CIC. If you give me a second, I can look
it
up.
That's all right. I mean,
to his point, there's certainly a research component, and you know, it certainly raises the visibility from an academic standing of the school, but that's not why they did this. I mean,
It's not why they did this. Maryland was in good standing academically in terms of his reputation already.
Yeah, I mean, being in a conference with Virginia, North Carolina, Duke, and Georgia Tech puts them in that same status.
But I do remember back when they won the national championship in basketball, that right after that, very smartly, Maryland started a public relations campaign, advertising campaign, taking Fear the Turtle to new heights, I thought.
Yeah.
But bragged about its academic standing. And it seems to me, maybe I'm wrong, that admission became more competitive at the University of Maryland after that.
Oh, sure.
At least in my mind, I connect those two events, two developments.
I graduated in 85. I couldn't get in there now. I probably couldn't get in there now.
One comment here from Nicole by email, agreeing with you, Milton, on the potential for Maryland losing recruits, the point you were making about football recruits in particular. She says she's a Penn State alumnus. She says Penn State alumni like myself have watched recruits become more attracted to schools such as Michigan and Ohio State since we joined the Big Ten. This is particularly disappointing since we aim to gain more Midwest recruits by moving to this conference. Anyway, she says, P.S., we're looking forward to welcoming Maryland football fans to State College in November. Let's take another call. This is Jeff ringing us on Midday. Jeff, you're up next. Go right ahead.
Hello. I am actually a Penn State alumni also.
Okay.
And about 2 weeks after Maryland announced they were joining the Big Ten, they also announced that next year the second game that Penn State plays against Maryland will actually be at M&T Bank Stadium. So that's already in the works. But that wasn't my main question. My main question is, when I look at the territory that the Big Ten covers from New Jersey and Maryland all the way out to Iowa and Wisconsin, I see a school sitting in the middle of the Big Ten that is the big jewel of college football. And I wonder how aggressive the Big Ten is going after Notre Dame and if they have any chance of capturing Notre Dame and what that might do to Maryland if they did.
That's a good question. You know, maybe Milton, you can answer that. But Andy, do we have Andy Coppins with us? Because this is appropriate. A good question for Andy Coppins, who covers the Big Ten. He's a former lead writer for Bleacher Report and covered Big Ten football. And now he's the publisher of the sports website, BigTenOT.com, which I'm just getting used to, just learning about. So, Andy, thank you for joining us. Andy Coppins.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question. But I think it's one that has an answer in the fact that the Big Ten, there's no question the Big Ten wanted that big fish named Notre Dame. It wanted it so bad. But when you heard the names Rutgers and Maryland, you knew that that ship had sailed a long time ago. There's no way that Notre Dame comes to the Big Ten. It's one of these things that, you know, people look at the good academic tradition at Notre Dame, the great athletic traditions that are there, especially in football, and the natural rivalries with, you know, Purdue and Michigan State and Michigan. But the reality is Michigan, or, you know, they have Notre Dame, excuse me, has a very different foresight, a different way of thinking about things than the Big Ten. And when you get down to why Rutgers and Maryland joined the Big Ten, it's because they fit both academically and athletically. Not only are they members of the AAU, they're also members of the CIC, which is kind of this, it's a consortium of sorts. I would equate it to the academic version of the Big Ten. It's a very select group of schools that kind of share research, share resources and libraries, and it's an insane sharing program that these institutions have. And Notre Dame has never been willing to kind of go that route. And they've never been willing to just become a full member of a conference. And that's a requirement that the Big Ten has and a requirement the ACC never going to give them.
And Notre Dame makes plenty of money from football without being in a conference. Andy, I want to ask you this in the time we had. I thought this was interesting. Milton, Andy had a piece, it's a few months ago, about Rutgers versus Maryland entering the Big Ten. And Andy, I don't want to get into all the details here, but this has to do with the business of college football and the Maryland's position financially going into this new conference versus Rutgers. Would you just fill our listeners in on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, you take a look at where the holes are for these two institutions. And originally, you know, you've already talked a lot about the financial situation, so I won't go too in-depth, but we all know Maryland is and was in a very deep hole financially, playing in the ACC. Now, when you go from a contract that gives you $15 million a year guaranteed money to a contract that is likely to net you, at least this year, over $30 million, and in the future, they're talking between $35 to $40 million a year, you're making up that gap rather quickly. You know, so that's a big move for them. But then when you take a look at Rutgers, they have the same situation, but to a lesser extent. They also had a very large hole that they were trying to make up, but it was smaller. I believe it was $8 million instead of, I think, $15 million. And so when you take a look at those two institutions, they both had some things that they kind of needed that the Big Ten was offering. And then you take a look at the fact that, you know, Rutgers, if they can get that football program to, you know, an 8 or 9 or 10-win team in the Big Ten, you're looking at a market that is so massive that they have never been able to tap into. A team like that can consistently win gets noticed in that market. You know, you take a look at the Yankees, you take a look at the Knicks, you take a look at all these teams. When they are winning games, people take notice in that area. And, yeah, I think it's the same with Maryland. I think both of these institutions have a similar profile. For me, though, Maryland is set up because of their contract and their relationship with Under Armour to kind of be that school that has an advantage going forward because they can kind of plow some extra money in to the program that Rutgers just can't do.
And let me just ask Andy this one more question before we say goodbye to him. Get to know him a little bit. Andy Coppens, C-O-P-P-E-N-S, from Big10OT.com. So what happens to Maryland this season going into the Big Ten? They're going to get beat up pretty good? They're going to compete? They're going to be 500? What do you think when you look at their schedule?
You know, and that's the key thing, is taking a look at their schedule, because they got a – the welcome that was not too kind, shall we say, in terms of their football schedule. You know, when you take a look at having to play, I think it's Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Iowa out of the Big Ten West, is arguably the three strongest teams in that division right out of the gate. It's not exactly the greatest welcome mat. However, this is a team that comes in, I think, a little underrated by Big Ten fans. I think they see this team as kind of maybe a little bit soft, and I don't necessarily agree with that. I think they play a very different style of offensive football, and that could be to their advantage, because the first time you see that team, you may not necessarily be 100% prepared for, you know, how Randy Etzel likes his offense to play. The big question for me is, if you take a look on the field, is defensively, I'm just not sure they play physical enough to hold up over an entire Big Ten season.
Yeah.
I think they've got talent there, so I think this is a team that could come in and be a, you know, a 5-7 to a 7-5 type of a football team, and arguably for me, I think that's a good starting point for them on the football field.
We'll look for Andy Coppens writing about Big Ten football at Big10OT.com. Thank you for your time today, Andy.
You bet. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you, Milton. So, what do you think of the season ahead? About what he said, or
what? Well,
no, you think it could be bloody?
Well, they've scheduled wisely non-conference. I mean, they've got James Madison, USF, West Virginia, and Syracuse
out of the conference. Yeah.
There's a chance they can probably go either 4-0 or 3-1 in there. But then, you know, to his point, and they start with Indiana, which is usually a cellar-dwelling team in the Big Ten. But then you got Ohio State. Then they get Iowa. Then they go to Wisconsin.
And then they go to Penn State.
Hmm. And then Michigan State.
Hmm.
And then Michigan.
I might go to the Michigan State game.
That could be.
You know, Bubba Smith played for them.
I heard. but that strikes me as five losses right there in the conference. I mean, they'll be lucky to, I think, you know, maybe 3-5.
Okay.
And that just.
Hey, got a tweet here from Dan Lawrence again.
Okay.
Penn State guy. He says, a lot of Penn State fans listen to your show. We do have a lot of money and rich alumni pouring money into our sports programs. He mentions the fellow who owns the Buffalo Sabres hockey team.
Oh, okay.
He built a sports arena, a hockey arena at Penn State.
At Penn State?
Yeah, he gave him the money. He said, build it. Now he's got players to feed his pro team.
You know, something else.
$100 million.
Well, we don't have that. I mean, maybe Kevin Plank will build. Let me, real quick, another thing I want to mention is sort of.
Quickly, because we're going to hear the University of Maryland fight song again.
You're going to start, Maryland fans are going to have to start paying for volleyball and wrestling tickets. Because
really?
Because that's the tradition in the Big
that's
Ten.
That's what they do in the Big Ten. You pay a ticket
pay
for everything?
For everything. So, I, you know,
is
I hope
song
it works.
Again, Milton? Is that other song, the other Maryland fight song you don't know?
No. I'll have to listen. I'll shut up now and listen so I can get the words.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in this afternoon to the Midday Show. Dan Roderick's here with Milton Kent. See you again soon.